hit Maria, oh I, oh I, oh I.
Oh, I hit it.
Maria, oh I, oh I, oh Maria, oh I, oh yeah. Maria, oh I, oh I, oh Maria, oh I, oh.
Maria,
oh I, oh I, oh Maria, oh I, oh yeah. Maria, oh I, oh I, oh Maria, oh I, oh
yeah.
Hi, this is Jonathan Paley of the Nervous Eaters, and you're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC Acra.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show. And today we will hear from Hillary Adun of Earth Justice talking about the Department of Environmental Conservation in New York and New York's new climate law. We'll also hear the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local Better Weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate. And it all begins after the local news, which is next on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
This is the news. This is the news. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
On air, in air, waves controlled. On air, in air, channel connection. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. This is the network. Network.
This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network.
This is the news.
This is the network.
Wave Farm programs are made possible in part by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program, administered in Greene County by CREATE, the Alexander and Marjorie Hoover Foundation, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors, including WGXC's sustaining supporters, who provide critical monthly support to Wave Farm's radio station, WGXC 90.7 FM. Thank you.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of the Bridge Street Theater in Catskill, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here. Melanie Lakosevic reports for Capital Region Independent Media that the economic impact of a major wind power project at the port of Queemans was the focus of the January meeting of the Ravina Queemans Selkirk Community Business Association. The forum featured officials from Carver Companies, which owns the port, and a representative from the New York State Energy Research and Development to discuss how the project will impact the area. The offshore wind project, announced by state officials in October, is the largest offshore wind supply chain contract award in the state's history at $86 million. Ørsted Offshore North America and Eversource Energy signed the contract in the fall with Riggs Distler and Company to build advanced foundation components for wind turbines at the port. Peter Lyon from NERSDA and following the presentation that the project is expected to create 115 jobs in the port of Queemans in the skilled trades, including electricians, carpenters, concrete masons, operating engineers, iron workers, and laborers. Lyon said, quote, "This project will help us reach our Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act goals, decarbonization, implementation of 9,000 megawatts of offshore wind, but it's also bringing in jobs and investment," unquote. Work at the port is expected to begin in the fourth quarter of 2022, and the actual assembly of the components will probably happen during the first or second quarter of 2023. Read more about this story at theupstater.com.
David Robinson reports in the Democrat and Chronicle that Governor Kathy Hochul announced February 9th an end to New York's indoor mask mandate for businesses on February 10th. Masking requirements will remain in New York schools through at least early March. Adding that local officials and businesses can still enforce indoor masks, Hochul said, and I quote, "New Yorkers, this is what we've waited for. Tremendous progress after two long years, but we're not done," end quote. Adding local officials and businesses can still enforce indoor mask mandates, Hochul said, and I quote, "The fight is not over. We're not surrendering. This is not disarmament," end quote. Hochul added, noting New Yorkers who still want to voluntarily wear masks should continue to do so. New York's mask mandate was set to expire February 21st. Hochul said officials will reconsider the school mask mandate in early March, looking at COVID-19 data on infections, test positivity, hospitalizations, and other factors. Hochul said, and I quote, "There will not be one number that says yes or no," end quote. Currently, only 38% of children ages 5 to 11 have received the first Pfizer-BioNTech's two-dose vaccine series. Massachusetts announced it is lifting its mask mandate in K-12 public schools effective February 28. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention continue to recommend mask use in many public indoor settings. Read more about this story in the Democrat and Chronicle.
Mid-Hudson News is reporting an audit released last week by the New York State Comptroller Thomas DiNapoli found that New York Power Authority has failed to install electric vehicle chargers where they are most needed. The state of New York has nearly 50,000 registered electric vehicles, and nearly half of the state's counties have no NYPA-installed charging stations. The state's plan to increase the number of public charging stations was meant to incentivize the use of electric vehicles, reduce carbon emissions, and address the climate change movement. The Charge New York program was launched in 2013 as a statewide network of up to 3,000 public and workplace charging stations to be ready in 5 years. It was followed in 2018 by Charge New York 2.0, which called for the installation of 10,000 public charging stations by the end of 2021. That same year, the authority had also announced the Evolve New York plan, a $250 million project to put high-speed chargers at airports and along major highways. Despite the allocation of significant funding, NYPA has fallen short of fulfilling its goals, according to DiNapoli. As of June 2021, only 277 public charging ports, or one for every 168 electric vehicles registered in the state, had been installed. An additional 221 workplace charging ports were put in place at the authority's own facilities and at facilities operated by businesses receiving power from NYPA's power programs, but they are only available to employees. Quote, "Compared to what was promised, the rollout of electric vehicle chargers has been a disappointment so far," unquote, DiNapoli said. Quote, "Since encouraging more drivers to switch to electric cars is part of the state's strategy for lowering emissions, we have a long road ahead. NYPA needs to look at our recommendations, deliver on its commitments, and get this program headed in the right direction," unquote. The entire report can be found at osc.state.ny.us. Read more about this story at midhudsonnews.com.
Roger Hannigan-Gilson reports in the Times Union that a group of residents in the town of Catskill are attempting to overturn the town board decision prohibiting cannabis lounges there. Catskill's town board voted 3-1 on December 29th to opt out of allowing cannabis lounges while allowing dispensaries. Residents challenging the decision get to directly vote on whether to permit the cannabis facilities if they gather enough signatures for a referendum. Sarah Pitkins Verdon is organizing the effort to overturn the decision. Verdon said, and I quote, "It's more than just the revenue from cannabis. It's about bringing people to our shopping areas all around the town. Catskill has a lot to offer. We're not trying to be a destination for cafes or dispensaries, but we're trying to add another aspect to the town," end quote. The citizens need signatures from 20% of registered voters in the town by February 15th to force the referendum on the November ballot. So far, they have about 300 of the 426 signatures needed, according to Verdon. Read more about this story in the Times Union.
Andrea Macko reports for Porcupine Soup that tensions ran high at a meeting of the Cairo Town Board February 7th as a result of a heated discussion about the Cairo Public Library. Diana Benoit, a member of the Library Board of Trustees, spoke about a lengthy Facebook post written in November by Town Board member Tim Powers, alleging mismanagement of the town's largely taxpayer-funded public library. In particular, he was especially critical of the salaries paid to library employees, including $70,000 for the library director, as well as the governance structure of the library. Powers is of the opinion that the library should be under the full control of the town board and within the town structure. The library board of trustees responded to the content of the social media post in an effort to address the, quote, inaccuracies and lies, unquote, contained therein. Benoit wanted to read the board's response aloud during the meeting on February 7th, but town supervisor Jason Watts initially intervened to stop her. Watts said town attorney Tal Rapplier advised against reading the letter in public session because he would consider it to be a personnel issue. According to Watts, Rapplier said he would be the person to answer Benoit's questions, but he was involved in a car accident on the way to the meeting and would not be able to attend. Benoit questioned why the matter should be discussed behind closed doors when it all started with a social media post intended for the public to read. A heated exchange occurred between Benoit and Powers, with Powers accusing the library board of publishing a letter that was, quote, nothing more than a witch hunt and disparaging comments against a town councilman, unquote. Some members of the public expressed support for reading the letter, quote, just read it, go ahead and read it, unquote, Watts finally said. After reading both Powers' original post and the trustees' response, there were questions, especially around the unauthorized $2,400 in legal fees expended by Powers during his investigation. However, Watts was determined to shut down the discussion and the meeting, saying, quote, we're going to move forward with Cairo. Everything is out in the open now, unquote. A link to Powers' original social media post and the Library Board of Trustees' response can be found on the WGXC newsroom page. Read more about the story at porcupinesoup.com.
Nick Reisman reports for New York State of Politics that Republicans suing to overturn New York's congressional redistricting are expanding their lawsuit to include the lines for state Senate seats. Misha Tysklin and Republican former state Senator George Winner, attorneys for the 14 plaintiffs in the redistricting lawsuit, said, and I quote, an amended petition has been submitted to the Steuben County Supreme Court in Hockenreiter v. Kochel. If accepted by the court, the amended petition would add a challenge to the constitutionality of the state Senate districts, including those adopted under the law signed by Governor Hochul last week, end quote. Republican opponents of the redistricting maps claim the district lines unfairly favor Democratic candidates, and many good government organizations and redistricting experts agree. Decisions from the court should come quickly, as arguments are scheduled for February 24th and petitioning for ballot access begins in March. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day.
And now, here is your WGXC weather update. Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Thursday, a chance of snow before 9 a.m., then a chance of rain and snow between 9 a.m. and 10 a.m. It will be partly sunny with a temperature high near 44 degrees. Thursday night, partly cloudy with a temperature low of around 25 degrees. And on Friday, mostly sunny with a high near 41 degrees. And Friday night, a slight chance of showers after 1 a.m. It will be mostly cloudy with a temperature low of around 35 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC, 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
Get a local event mentioned on All Together Now. Go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page. And copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
And in the WGXC community calendar, there's all sorts of local events for you to find something to do, outdoors, indoors, and more. One event is the Groove Harmonic Trio performing this Saturday at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill. And live on the radio at WGXC, a webcast at WGXC.org, and a broadcast on 90.7 FM. The show starts at 7:30 p.m. Saturday, February 12th, and it's the Groove Harmonic Trio, which is Keith Prey on organ, Mike Wooten on guitar, and Bobby Previtt on drums. Turn out for some live improvisation or tune in at WGXC.org.
Polar Bear took their experimental jazz to a new level of intensity on their album In Each and Every One. And we'll hear a track on the next Deep Threes. Plus, music from Clay Rendering, Machine Woman, and Hoshka. Deep Threes. Music beyond boundaries for a digital world.
Tune in to Deep Threes after the noon news on Monday at WGXC 90.7 FM.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Thursday, February 10th. Early this morning, we see a gracious 30 degrees in Twilight Park and 32 in Hammertown. Spots of rain are expected through the region today. A high of 48 happens at 2 p.m. After dark, the rain stops and near dawn, lows will hit 24 degrees. Freezing road conditions could be an issue. Tomorrow will be dry with a high of 46 at 3 p.m. 39 degrees overnight takes us to a Saturday with a rainy morning and a high of 48 degrees. Saturday night, however, temps fall to 21 degrees, then stay there all day so snow can fall just about all day on Sunday. About a half inch is expected. Sunset today will be at 5:06 p.m. and sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:54 a.m. Looking way up, we see an incoming plasma stream is due to arrive on Sunday or Monday. Solar wind speed is currently 398 kilometers per second at 13.8 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 8 megahertz till dark, then overnight it will be good below 8 megahertz and fair above. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 3, quiet. The current sunspot number is 78. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Elaine Shimono of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Latest reports indicate that the best protection from radioactive fallout is a shelter.
Yet less than 5% of our population has one.
Do you?
Now, from Survival, one of the nation's leading manufacturers, comes an economical combination steel and concrete block, civil defense approved fallout shelter, offering maximum protection from nuclear fallout and falling debris.
FHA approved. You need nothing down. 5 years to pay.
Will you be prepared in case of atomic attack?
Will you and your loved ones be protected from nuclear fallout and falling debris?
For your family's protection from nuclear fallout, see a survival shelter today.
Thank you. Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
And nothing hinders our national security more than funding our national priorities in piecemeal fashion.
Congressional leaders hammered out a bipartisan deal to boost military and non-defense budgets, but New Hampshire Senator Jeanne Shaheen criticized the reliance on continuing resolutions, saying it erodes military readiness. The House passed a stopgap measure Tuesday to avert a government shutdown next week, which the Senate is expected to approve to keep cash flowing through March 11th. The Vienna nuclear talks are at a crucial point. The White House believes it has until the end of the month to salvage the 2015 Iran nuclear agreement. Former President Trump pulled the U.S. out of the deal in 2018 and reimposed sanctions. Iranian-American journalist Nigar Mortazavi contends it was the wrong move.
It didn't achieve any policy goals. It basically didn't achieve any change in policy in Iran, even though it inflicted a lot of economic pressure.
After a closed-door briefing, a group of senators expressed alarm about how quickly Tehran could attain a nuclear weapon. The European Union wants to continue diplomatic talks over the Russian military buildup along the Ukraine border and called for President Vladimir Putin to pull back troops. He refused unless NATO and Western allies reduce their Eastern European military presence. Nearly 6 months after the U.S. withdrew from Afghanistan, 8 million Afghans are on the brink of starvation. With some Taliban members still classified by the U.S. as terrorists, the international community has frozen billions in assets. At a Senate hearing Wednesday, former British Foreign Secretary David Miliband said innocent civilians are being punished.
Some of our staff across Afghanistan begged me to be blunt. Current policy will indeed mean that the starvation crisis kills more Afghans than the past 20 years of war, which is an extraordinary indictment of the current policy mix.
Now to Canada, where officials warn things could get ugly quickly with the trucker convoy protest blocking the Ambassador Bridge. It supports 25% of U.S.-Canada trade. Demonstrations against a Canadian vaccine mandate have popped up in other cities from Vancouver to Montreal. Oscar-winning actress and activist Angelina Jolie struggled to hold back tears while testifying on Capitol Hill. She urged Congress to renew the Violence Against Women Act, which it has failed to do for more than a decade. She argued victims of failed systems should be angry.
You're supposed to be calm and patient and ask nicely. But you try staying calm when it's as if someone is holding your head underwater and you're drowning. Try to stay calm when you're witnessing someone you love being harmed.
Last year, the House passed a reauthorization bill to provide grants for state and local government programs that address sexual assault, domestic abuse, dating violence, and stalking. I'm Mary Sherman for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our eTrust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Cool investment.
You're listening to The Morning Show on WGXC 90.7 FM.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
We're joined today by Hillary Adun, who is an attorney with Earth Justice. And she and others recently have submitted comments to the Department of Environmental Conservation related to some guidance they were given on how to implement parts of the new climate law, the CLCPA, particularly Article 7, which relates to how the new law overlays with the issue of granting permits to new and existing facilities. So Hillary, why is this an important issue?
New York's Pathbreaking Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act sets mandates for the state to rapidly reduce greenhouse gas emissions, scale up renewable energy capacity, and make that transition in a way that's equitable. The guidance documents that the Department of Environmental Conservation released will provide guidance on how key parts of that law will be implemented in the coming years and beyond. It's really important to get this right to make sure that the state is making specific decisions in a way that will truly get us to the renewable energy economy that we need to move towards and move towards as rapidly as possible.
Now, recently, DEC did cite the CLCPA in denying the air permits for two new or rebooting power plants, one being Dan Scammer down around Kingston, the other one being down in New York City, Astoria. Is there anything in their draft proposal that, clarifies how they are going to be treating new power plants and, you know, how these power plants must be part of the effort to meet the goal of trying to reduce greenhouse gas emissions by 40% by 2030?
So the Section 7.2 of the CLCPA is a really important section, and that requires that agencies, when making decisions like whether to issue a permit, consider whether that decision will be consistent with or will interfere with the state's achievement of the greenhouse gas reduction requirements. And so in denying the permits for the Astoria and Dan Scammer facilities, the department did cite that provision because it determined that allowing the continued and expanded use of natural gas was not consistent with our obligation to meet those greenhouse gas reduction requirements. In commenting on the department's proposed guidance, we emphasize that the department needs to clarify that it does have the authority under that section to deny permits for projects that would be inconsistent with or would interfere with the state's achievement of those greenhouse gas reduction requirements, because we have made this commitment and we have a legal obligation to achieve those limits. And so we need to be making decisions along the way that will get us there.
Now, one of the issues that often comes up, we face this, for instance, over in Sheridan Avenue in Albany, when the Governor Cuomo wanted to put two frack gas turbines into the centuries-old steam plant down there, is the argument, well, yeah, okay, going to have a lot of emissions out of this facility, but, you know, it's going to be less emissions than previously, so this is, you know, an improvement. So, you know, did they give any clarification about, you know, if they can make the argument, oh, it's a little bit less emissions than previously, you know, we shouldn't have to worry about the CLCPA?
So what we've tried to emphasize in our comments is that the state has to achieve a zero emission electric grid by 2040. And we can't just flip a switch in 2040 from fossil fuels to renewable energy. We need to be making that transition now. And so not only do we need to be ensuring that we're not relying on fossil fuels by that date, but we need to be ensuring that we're making decisions today that make that transition possible. And so investing in new or even existing fossil fuel infrastructure doesn't make sense. We need to be ensuring that we have a grid that will support the renewable energy that we're going to need to achieve those legal commitments. So the fact that a fossil fuel plant might emit slightly less than it did a few years ago, that's not enough to get us to where we need to go. And the state has been clear that where possible, alternatives to fossil fuels always need to be used. And that means renewable energy, battery storage, energy efficiency, all of these tools that we have at our disposal to make the changes that we need to be making.
Now, one of the things I know that Earth Justice and many others are very concerned about is, you know, how this new CLCPA law, you know, tries to reduce the historic level of pollution that occurs in environmental justice communities. What were some of the points you were trying to get, you know, DEC to sort of strengthen on with respect to an environmental justice?
Right. So I mentioned that Section 7.2 of the CLCPA requires agencies to consider whether their decisions are inconsistent with the greenhouse gas reduction requirements. Section 7.3 of the CLCPA is equally important, and it prohibits agency decisions that would disproportionately burden what are referred to as disadvantaged communities. And these are communities that have historically been overburdened by environmental pollution. We know that the impacts of pollution fall disproportionately on communities of color and low-income communities. And as the state transitions to a renewable energy economy, we need to ensure that those communities are not experiencing greater burdens. We need to make sure that they are able to benefit from the state's investments in clean energy and energy efficiency and have access to the jobs and other economic opportunities that that presents. The state, although it has issued this guidance on Section 7.2, essentially punted on issuing guidance on how to implement Section 7.3. And we underscored that the state really needs to move as quickly as possible to propose guidance on Section 7.3 so that the public can comment and then finalize that guidance so that it's clear what the state needs to be doing to comply with that obligation.
Now, one of the other key issues we talked earlier, particularly about how the CLCPA, you know, factors into consideration of new, particularly air permits for, you know, these polluting facilities. But there's also existing permits, and, you know, our station in particular has been looking at the Norlite hazardous waste incinerator across the river in Cohoes, whose Title V permit expired more than a year ago, as well as their federal waste permit. Now, DEC did recently tell us that they are going to apply the CLCPA to this particular facility, which has drawn a lot of, you know, media coverage over the last few years. But how do the rules from DEC, how do they generally deal with, you know, existing facilities when their permits come up, you know, for renewal?
So the guidance that DEC issued seemed to suggest that DEC didn't think it was necessary in every instance to do this consistency analysis when permit renewals are before them. And in our comments, we stressed that DEC has to apply the CLCPA equally to permit renewals. There's no basis in the law for distinguishing between a new permit and a permit renewal. The law requires DEC to do this analysis for all permitting decisions. And there's also no basis in fact for that distinction. From a climate perspective, there's no difference between greenhouse gases emitted from a new power plant and an existing power plant. We need to address all of it. And so we urge DEC to clarify that its obligation to take all of this into consideration applies equally to permit renewals.
We've been talking with Hillary Adun, attorney for Earth Justice. So maybe we can finish up. People want more information about Earth Justice, about the CLPA, and where does this proceeding, you know, with DEC go from here? And
DEC will be finalizing its guidance in the coming months. You can learn more about us at our website, Earth Justice. And I want to note that many other organizations signed on to these comments. We're part of a broad movement that's pushing the state to make sure that this law really meets its promise of climate justice.
And I will know, we both have participated a bit with New York Renews, and I know Earth Justice and Sierra Club, many groups are going to be urging people to submit comments for the draft climate action plan. We'll certainly be covering that. Hillary Adun, Earth Justice. This has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Radio Network.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
That was the Matthew Shipp Trio with Lynx from their 2020 album Piano Music. It's Matthew Shipp on piano, Michael Bizio on bass, and Newman Taylor Baker on drums.
40 days, 40 nights, since my baby left this town. Shining all day long, but the rain keep coming down. She's my life, I need her soul. Why she left, I just don't know. 40 days and 40 nights since I sat right down and cried. Lord, help me, it just ain't right. I love that girl with all of my mind. 40 days and 40 nights since my baby broke my heart. Searching for her a while, like a blind man in the dark. Love can make a poor man rich, or break his heart, I don't know when. Ship out on the sea. Praying for her each night that she would come back home to me. Life and love is right. I hope she come back home tonight.
Here's Catskill's Brian DeWan with the song Shooting Star from his 2007 album Sleep on It. Thank you.
That's what fear to do.